Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the Ecom Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight-figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today, we're capping off the eight-part financial mastery series that we embarked on a couple months ago. Man, last week, I was hoping to do eight straight, and I got so close. I did seven, and then for reasons I will spare you from getting into, we had kind of a Steve Chu episode in the middle. Of all the people to blow up the series, it would be Steve. It would be Steve. That makes sense. But excited to cap it off today. Yeah, going to be getting into talking about pillar number eight, which is pass it on, giving. And I'm going to be talking about mentorship, about raising up. If you have kids, how you think about passing that on to your children. Wisdom, talk a little bit about, you know, should you or should you not pass on money to them. Talk about charitable giving. And kind of cap off the series. So yeah, I'll be diving that into just a minute. Before we do that, I usually, a lot of times, man, I have been terrible about doing my Forge What Matters segments on the show. But I had one here I wanted to share a little bit out of at the top of the episode. I've been grinding this week. I've got the results from the Ecom Fuel Trends Report, about 300 data results, and have been just neck deep in those for the last 2 weeks, putting together the report. And it's been really fun, interesting, but it's also been mentally taxing. You know, just when you're cognitively trying to think through something for 5, 6, 7 hours a day, man, I've just been coming home and just been wiped out. And today I was planning on coming and doing the same thing. And I'm kind of on a deadline to try to finish this in time. And last night I got a text from a friend. We've had a terrible snow winter in Montana, horrific snow, and it finally dumped on us here. And my friend texted me last night and said, hey, are you going to be up at the hill tomorrow? And my first reaction was, no, I have so much to do. I've got to get this done. I need to get this done before I head out of town on Sunday. And I stopped for a second and I thought, man, what am I doing? I own a business. Hasn't snowed all year. I haven't seen this friend in at least a couple months, and it's seeing him has been overdue. And I desperately need a break. And so I said, screw it. I'm going. I got up this morning and headed up the hill, fought with probably, you know, half of Bozeman to get on the lift. And it was amazing. Like, it was great seeing my friends. It was an incredible powder day. Came back with just a complete renewed vigor to dive into these spreadsheets and analysis. Anyway, why am I telling you this? It is really easy, I think, sometimes, especially if you are goal-oriented, if you're the type of person who can build a business, to just get after it and just be on the treadmill and stay there for too long. And just as a nice little friendly PSA, because I desperately needed it yesterday, make sure you're taking time to do stuff you really enjoy and you love. Partially because if you don't, what are you even doing building this business? I mean, that's what it's supposed to do in the first place. And secondly, you're going to probably be more productive if you can take that break. I probably lost a little time today of productivity in terms of being gone, but I would guess I know coming back into the office, everything but my legs were wiped out. But everything else mentally, from a mental precision and sharpness, was ready to get after it. So anyway, it's my little PSA. If you're in the trenches right now, if you've been burned out, take some time off, go do something fun, blow a day off, and recharge a bit. I promise it'll be worth it. All right, let's go ahead and get into this week's episode. Our final pillar number eight of financial mastery, pass it on. So I got to be honest, this was probably the pillar I was least excited to record about. Not because I don't think it's important or I'm excited about the topic, but because it's the hardest pillar to talk about and record without sounding like an ass. I think if you get too preachy, you sound that way. If you talk too much about giving that way, this is not a moral lecture. It's a practical case. And so I will try to do my best to avoid erring into that category as much as possible while still being real and talking about it. But just a little disclaimer here. I will do my best, cannot promise any outcomes, but maybe you can circle back with me at the very end and tell me if I failed or succeeded in that regard. But so passing on, you know, giving, maybe a little unnecessary, but actually I think it is. Like, why give? I think there's two key reasons to give: time, energy, money. And the first one is, I'm going to take the selfish perspective first. There's a ton of research on the topic that giving makes you happier. You're a happier person. You're going to live longer if you give, volunteer. You're going to earn more money. Really going right. I mean, like I said, already very into that territory. wild, you know, just self-promotion and self-interest here. But Arthur Brooks, I'll mention him again later. He wrote a book, From Strength to Strength, one of my favorite books, and many others. And he's, you know, talked about how giving correlates with higher incomes, not lower. So I think there's a lot of like self-interested reasons to give. But I think also another good reason is because you should, right? Like there's a lot of messed up stuff in the world. There's a lot of people that are struggling in the world. And chances are, if you're listening to this and thinking about building your 7 or 8 figure business, or you have one that you're working on, you're probably not doing too terribly, or at least relative to the rest of the world, you're doing pretty dang good. So I think it's a really good combination. It's one of those rare things where like, it's something that you have a obligation to do. And it's also something that benefits you if you actually follow through with that. So first category, you know, I want to talk about is mentorship here. And is mentorship such a weird word? You know, people ask like, how do I get a mentor? And that's super hard to do. And it's, you know, something, it's actually something you probably don't talk, you know, it's not a label you put on people, especially when you're talking to them per se, but I think it's a pretty important thing. And going back to Arthur Brooks again, he has this idea where he talks about fluid intelligence and crystallized intelligence that shift throughout your life. And fluid intelligence is just kind of what you have when you're, you know, you're in your 20s, you're out of school, you're just hungry for the world, you're grinding raw horsepower. You can solve problems. It's just kind of like hustle, grind, you know, raw intelligence. And then there's crystallized intelligence, and that's more judgment, pattern recognition, hard-won wisdom, and that builds with age. And one of the things in that book, slight rabbit trail here from mentorship, he talks about how one of the biggest mistakes people can make is to try to continue to be at the top of their field, at the top of their cutting edge field as they age, and they're losing that fluid intelligence and they're gaining that crystallized intelligence. The people who really kind of burn out and flame out, not even flame out, but just, you know, kind of Brett Favre it, I'm going to use that as a verb, stay way past their time when they should have hung up the cleats or at least moved into something else, are the people who try to stick with that fluid intelligence. You know, think about the 69-year-old who's trying to build a TikTok AI app. I don't know, that's a terrible example. I'm probably going to get some hate mail from some 69-year-olds who are rocking in that category. But in general, as you age, you have that crystallized intelligence. So mentorship is how you deploy that crystallized intelligence as you get older and get some hard-won wisdom. And, you know, a lot of us didn't have one defining mentor. Like I'll speak for myself. I had mentors in other areas of my life, but from the business perspective, you know, I cobbled it together. I had a couple of people who, investors who I met with maybe once or twice to get some advice. And I had really good friends who have been amazing sounding boards over the years. But in terms of like a mentor that stuck with me for five, you know, for multiple years, I didn't have that, cobbled it together. And I think that's pretty normal for a lot of us. If you're an entrepreneur, you're used to like just solving problems and figuring stuff out and making it happen on your own. And that's cool. But you can still become that for someone else. Like especially on the online world, online world has not gotten easier the last few years, right? Like I'm doing this bemoan to you at the beginning, and not bemoaning, it's a fun project, but it's a wearying project, going through the trends report right now. And just some of the, man, the competitive pressures that have ramped up over the last, even just last 5 years are pretty crazy. And it's harder now than it used to be. And you can, for someone coming up in the digital world these days, having someone who's been through a lot of stuff, digital and otherwise in business, is pretty valuable. You know, I think, for me personally, I think it's important. I don't think you have to try to help everyone. If you try to help everyone, if you just have a coffee date here, coffee date there, you know, you're scheduled 4 coffee dates a week with random people because you think you're helping them, you're probably not going to have a whole lot of impact. Probably going to waste a lot of your time and a lot of time with people. But I do think it makes sense to have one or two people you're genuinely invested in and going deep with over years or decades. There's someone who I have been involved with for probably 15 years. Young guy, amazing dude, had a lot of entrepreneurial ambition. And I have not been wildly involved for that whole 15 years, but especially for the first like 3 to 5 years when he was younger and felt like he could, you know, hopefully benefit from a little bit of added presence, was, you know, tried to help with entrepreneurial mentorship and with financial mentorship. And then probably on the back, you know, 2/3 of that was still in his life when he needed it on a less regular cadence, but just as a presence or he could reach out to. And it was really cool. You know, he's someone who's actually grown and built a business, and it's been amazingly rewarding to see him over the last, especially 2 or 3 years, start to get real traction there, to mature there. And chances are he could have, you know, well, I know he could have done it on his own. He would have found a different way. But it's been cool. Hopefully, I like to think that I was able to help maybe shorten the journey or save a little bit of pain for him throughout the thing and throughout the process. So that's really cool. Anyway, mentorship, think about that, especially if you've been doing this for a while. I think it helps. You're going to help people with, and also, you know, selfishly, it's something that you can see some really cool things out of yourself. Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick sidebar. I want to introduce you to David, who's the owner of dropguys.com, where they make super heavy duty phone cases. He's a newer member to eCommerce Fuel, and here's what he had to say about his experience with our vetted private community for 7- and 8-figure owners.
My favorite aspect of eCommerce Fuel is the community. The reason being is because having gone through the membership application process, I know that everyone is verified, everyone is legit, and everyone's very transparent. Whereas on other communities, such as Reddit, Twitter, you don't really know how much authority they have, how much success they have had, and whether how much weight to give to their opinions. Whereas on eCommerce Fuel, you know they're tried and tested, and you can act on their advice with confidence.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7- or 8-figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show. Second, kids. So man, kids is a big one. If you don't have kids, apologies, you can skip the next section here. If you do, still apologies, because this is kind of scatterbrained all over the place. But like, when you think about kids, what you want to give to them, you know, you want to mentor them in life, with money, with values, with what you believe. And I think with kids, you know, the fear, as I was thinking about this, I was like, what is it you want to pass on to kids? What are the fears you have for your kids? And I think for me, one of the biggest ones, you want to raise kids that can stand on their own, that aren't soft, that aren't dependent, that are able to have self-respect that comes from earning your own way. And you want to give them capability and competence. I think that's one of the biggest things. And so when I think about, you know, I've got kids that range from 8 to 13, and trying to talk with them, especially my 13-year-old now, about financial intelligence, like investing, about saving money, I think one of the biggest things you can do is model the absolute, well, not one of, the absolute best thing you can do is model. You know, so if you want your kids to be kind and generous, you know, you need to bring them into your conversations, and when you're kind and generous, you got to do it maybe in a tactful way so they don't have to see everything. But yeah, I think money is another one too. You want kids that are financially independent, and the idea of how much to give to your kids is a really challenging one. Like when I, with college for our kids, like my plan, and my parents did this, and I thought it was a really good plan. My parents probably paid for 2/3 of my college, but that other third, they had me saving for and contributing my lawn mowing and shoveling money for, you know, since I was probably 10 or 11 or 12. And then when I got done with school, with high school, that lump sum of money that they had saved for me and also I had invested over the previous, you know, 8-ish years, they just handed to me and said, hey, here you go. Good luck. If you want to go buy a, you know, a Porsche 911, sweet. You will probably deeply regret that instead of investing in a college education in, you know. And it was great because I remember being in school and knowing exactly how much I had, and I didn't have to talk to my parents about money. There weren't arguments, there weren't fights. I knew exactly how much I had. Some of my other friends had no idea how much they had. They didn't know when they could or couldn't spend money. So I like the idea of giving, trying to help my kids with college, but also making sure they have some skin in the game there. And, you know, one thing I know I don't want to do is give my kids a ton of money when I retire or when I die. You know, I think about, and maybe my thinking on this may change, but when I think about, like, you think about estate planning, I don't think I would want to pass on to my kids more money than would be excluded from the, you know, from estate requirements and trust and things like that. Just because I don't think that would be good for them, even if they're older and doing well. I mean, you know, just kind of talking out loud here, but I think with kids, there's that great Warren Buffett quote, you want your kids to have enough to be able to do anything, but not so much that they can do nothing. Again, continuing with Andrew's, you know, kind of just stream of consciousness hour here, I think when you think about when is most beneficial to give kids money, I think one, if I was ever going to give kids money after college, it would probably be to help them buy a house at some point. Like I think about one of my kids wants to be a teacher. She would be an incredible teacher. She's probably one of the, if not the best, you know, young people I've seen with kids in my life. And she's already old enough to know that like, hey, man, teachers don't make a lot of money, right? Like, and so if you got to a point and you're an adult and you've got a kid who's a world, who's just, make an incredible difference in the world by being a teacher, but she decides not to do it because she can't make it work financially. And you have the financial means, you know, it'd be kind of a wonderful gift to them and to society to say, hey, we're going to help you buy a modest house somewhere so you can focus more on this thing you love and the world needs as opposed to, you know, maximizing your life for money. So anyway, a lot of rambling things in the air, still figuring all of this out. But I think with kids, you know, making sure you give them, the money is less important. What's more important is passing along competence, a work ethic, financial education, all those kind of things. I think those are some of the things that we get real busy with business and with life. And I think it's just important to invest intentionally in our kids and building competence as any of those other things. So third thing, charitable giving. One of the things I think that is really from a framework from charitable giving I'll start with here is I think it's important to find a place or two where you can give and concentrate and focus on your giving. You know, it's great to still take a shotgun approach, but I think for two reasons. One, well, let's take the very pragmatic, self-interested approach here. The happiness boost that you get for giving is strongest when you can see the outcomes. I think there's scientific data to back that up. That's one reason from the self-interested side. But I also think the sense of impact you see and the responsibility you feel when you do concentrate your giving is much stronger when you concentrate in one or two areas. For example, like we this last year talked about, if you've listened to the podcast for a while, my family and I did a gap year that wrapped up this last summer. And part of that gap year, we went to Asia and visited an orphanage that we have got involved with. We originally got connected with them and involved through some ties in Montana, and then we went and visited them. And it was a really cool experience. The kids, it was their favorite part of that portion of the trip. And while I loved seeing the kids and it was, you know, it was kind of a neat experience to go see there, the biggest thing that it left me with was this sense of responsibility. Like, man, there's all these kids here. And if people don't continue to support them, and if we don't continue to support them, these kids that we met, like we have no idea how their lives are going to end up. Probably not for the better. And so I think that's a powerful thing. That's not always a good thing. Right? Like, let me rephrase that. That's not always a fun thing. Responsibility is not usually fun, right? But I think it is a powerful thing in helping you see what's important, continue to stick with something, and be able to think through the impact there. And so I think that's one of the reasons why concentrating your giving in fewer places is probably more powerful. Super boring framework stuff for giving charitably. I think if you have not used a donor advised fund for your giving before, we strongly recommend it. So if you think about when you're giving, you want to do it in a tax advantaged manner, right? Go back to the pillar about the three financial levers you have and thinking through tax, you know, if you're going to give, might as well make it tax efficient. So when you traditionally give, you can usually only take that tax deduction in the year that you give. So you write a check to a nonprofit, a charity, and you can only take that deduction in the year that you do it, which is kind of inconvenient because there are sometimes you want to be able to write the checks for tax planning purposes, but you're not quite ready to give or deploy that money. And that's where a donor advised fund comes in. So a donor advised fund is like a special account that you can get. Like I know that Fidelity Charitable does one. I think maybe Schwab does one. There's a lot of them out there. You can write this check to your own little charitable trust that you can set up. It's very easy. You can set them up in, I don't know, 20 minutes online, 15 minutes online. You can get the deduction the year you contribute to your trust, and then you can donate the money on your own timetable after that. And not only that, but you can also invest the money into the stock market, into other assets that are going to hopefully appreciate over time. You can also donate appreciated securities to that donor advised fund. So another great tax strategy, a lot of people probably know this, is if you want to, let's say you want to donate $10,000 somewhere and you've got stock worth $10,000, if you take that stock and you sell it and then pay tax on the gains, and then make a donation, you'll be able to make a smaller donation to the charity after you pay taxes, and your deduction that you get off your taxes is smaller. But if you can just donate that appreciated stock directly to the charity, then you get a larger deduction and the charity gets more money. It's a win-win. The problem is not a lot of charities want to accept your 70 shares of, you know, whatever it is. So with a donor advised fund, you can donate those appreciated, you know, assets. It could be, you know, it could be stocks, could be cryptocurrency. It could be, there's a bunch of stuff they accept, and that makes it much easier. So donor advised funds, awesome. Strongly recommend. Another framework I like is like, and this doesn't have to be the case, but it's kind of an interesting challenge if you want to think about really taking this to the extreme, is potentially trying to give a little bit more every year as a percent of your income. Because now, one of the things that's a challenge for me is like, man, I have such a good life. And you could go and give, I could give significantly more money and probably help meaningfully people that need it desperately more than I do to downgrade my quality of life. There are, you know, kind of said differently, there's things I'm doing very selfishly that are luxuries that other people could really use for just, you know, basic essentials. That said, you know, you take that to the extreme limit and you could say, hey, I'm just going to live like a pauper and give everything else away. I think you can be generous without having to live in poverty. You know, maybe Mother Teresa might disagree with me here. So it's the long, you know, kind of the ever-asked question, like how much, where is that reasonable line? And so for me, one thing I've tried to challenge myself is every year, don't feel guilty about things. You know, I think we're meant to enjoy life and enjoy good things in life and the good things that money can buy alongside giving. But I like the idea and the challenge of every year trying to give a little more as a percent of my income as I did the year before. Builds the habit, helps you think about it. It keeps that kind of pressure on the generosity side, but also doesn't make you, you know, I just like that as a framework. So, you know, as we're wrapping up this episode and also the whole series, the instincts that made you good at business, I think apply to giving in all these different areas. Find leverage, invest in things that compound, and think long-term. You know, this is the last episode in the series, and it's been kind of I tried to structure this as a chronological thing. You know, the very first episode was Your Money, Your Responsibility. We worked through financial understanding to, you know, and the concepts all built on each other. But even though this is the last pillar and something you should be thinking about, especially if you've done well financially, I think it's something that you should think about even right out of the gates. My mom said something to me once that has really stuck with me. And I think it's true when I was younger. She said, if you don't give when you have a little, you're not going to give when you have a lot. I think, you know, people think, hey, when I'm really making money and doing really well, then I'll start giving. And I don't think that's true. Like, I don't think it gets easier the more money you make. So anyway, the challenge to you would be like, wherever you are in this whole journey of business and finance and life and financial mastery, I would start with this right now to whatever degree you can, partially because selfishly it's going to make you, it's going to benefit you, happiness, you know, lifespan, potential future earnings, but also because, you know, we should. And there's a lot of things messed up in the world, a lot of people who need help. I think it's great on both sides. So anyway, that's a wrap on that. I hope I was able to thread this needle without, you know, being too boring and too vague, but also not, again, crossing too often into the pompous ass category. Again, you'll have to let me know how I did. I thank you for listening to the series. This has been a fun series to do on financial mastery. I'm hoping to put together kind of a comprehensive PDF on this. I'm hoping to do some live sessions with our community at Ecom Fuel about this. So yeah, thank you for following along. Thank you for sticking with an 8-episode solo series with me where you had to listen to me straight for throughout the whole thing. I really enjoyed it and hope you did too. If you're an entrepreneur who wants to connect with other experienced owners who are working to build a financially vibrant business alongside a rich, meaningful life, head on over to ecommercefuel.com to learn more and connect with 1,000 entrepreneurs just like you. Work hard, adventure often, and forge what matters. Look forward to seeing you again next Friday.